Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back here to Third Stream View. I'm your not-so-humble host, PK, and I'm here every Monday evening here at bbsradio.com, Station 2. And this show, Third Stream View, airs at 8:55 Pacific, 10:55 Central, and 11:55 Eastern. And as I am wont to do, I always praise the suits in the office at BBS Radio. Thank you, gentlemen. Of course, I use the word gentlemen loosely, but thank you for your constant efforts at preserving free speech, First Amendment, free thought, a free press, and I would hope, and I'm sure you do, the Western tradition of free inquiry, which of course means looking into things from many points of view and the freedom to do this and the freedom not to be persecuted or arrested like is happening in Europe, especially so-called Holocaust deniers. Even those who write critically or they question the details of the Holocaust and they do not advocate violence or hatred or, you know, anybody losing their rights. As I also agree with, my critiques are an expose on power, regardless of who wields it or who yields that power. And it's never accompanied with kill this group of people or they take their rights away or harm these people. No, mine is a cut to the chase critique of the way I see geopolitics and history and economics. And I stand by my decisions, and I just go for it. I don't beat around the bush. The things I know about, which is when my mind and my heart and my soul and my gut are all on the same page, I'm usually correct. If one or more of those are out of order or not on the same page, I usually won't stick my neck out because I'm not sure. That's how I roll. Now, if anybody would like to call into the show here and speak to the mighty PK, that would be me. The number here is 888-429-5471. 888-429-5471. I am especially a fan of and enthusiastic partake enthusiastically and history, especially revision history, because revisionism is not content to let sleeping dogs lie. And we know that the winners usually write and dictate history, and time is the greatest friend of truth. So that, especially with the advent of time and the internet, there's more inquiry and research being done. And sure, there's BS out on the internet too, but I mean, there's a lot of truth and fact. And so now it's harder for the globalists to get away with what they're up to because people know in a split second on the other side of the world. So that is how I see things. As I said, I'm very critical of Israel and Zionism. I believe it's a major problem in the world today. And, you know, they're still banging the drum to attack Iran, which is totally unnecessary. It's totally needless. It's a huge waste. Israel's interests are not the same as the U.S. Let me make that clear. They're not the same. Israel is not our 51st state, and there's no reason to attack Iran. In fact, Iran stands for Israel requires American naivety. These same damn Zionist neocons, these neoconservatives who led us into Iraq, now they want to attack Iran. And what a mess that's going to be. In addition to the nuclear fallout that they'll kick up, all the people that will die, and then more nation rebuilding and more bankrupt America, all to Israel's benefit. So, but meanwhile, there's a lot of debate inside of Israel. A lot of Israelis are against going to a war with Iran. So, and by the way, again, Iran's leader, Ahmadinejad, never said he wanted to wipe Israel off the map. His words are more into the effect of, just like the communist regime in Russia vanished from the pages of history, so must the Zionist regime vanish from the pages of history. So Ahmadinejad knows the difference between Zionism and Judaism. In fact, you can see on the internet, I saw this a few years ago, Ahmadinejad and the rabbis he met with in New York, I think he met with him again recently when he was here. These are the, I'm a fan of this, Jews Against Zionism. Rabbi David Weiss is their spokesman. And they may be small in number, but they are righteous and they are correct in their history and their facts and the way they look at the Middle East and Israel. So I'm going to have this guest on and I'm going to have them contact her now. And we're going to go, her name is Beth, hopefully she's out there, and we're going to go around about history, and she's going to bring a few things to my attention. But she's never met or matched wits with the mighty PK, so we'll see what happens, and we'll take it from there, assuming that she's out there and that she can be reached, because I spoke to her agent, my friend, Blaine. And he said it's on. So hopefully the suits will contact her, and she'll be ready to go up against the mighty PK at her own risk. So we'll see how this pans out. And in the meantime, we had a masterful – I didn't see the vice presidential debates, but – I mean, why do I need to see them? They basically are for all the same things. And they basically support the same major things. And let me guess, I bet Beth is also an Obama supporter. So I'm gently going to take her apart when she finally gets on. They're trying to connect her now. So we'll see what happens. And I hope Blaine will be listening too, so he can enjoy this, because PK likes controversy. So yes, Saturday Night Live spoofed the vice presidential debates. You know, no one, I guess, pays much attention to the vice presidential debates or thinks that much will come of it. But when you see what Ryan is all about, I mean, he's had a government job pretty much ever since he left college. So he's been in the, you know, public sector most of his life. So he's another, you know, big government Republican. And I see that Beth is on the line. Beth, honey, are you out there, baby?
I'm here.
You're here. Would you welcome to Third Stream View?
Okay.
Would you
I don't
like
know what that is,
or,
but okay.
would you like some tea or coffee?
I've got lemonade, but thank you.
Good, because it is self-service.
Oh, that's true.
So let's cut to the chase, honey. Have you read my – did Blaine
– Blaine sent the email. I did not get a chance to read it, and I'm sorry.
Oh, well, you're unprepared then, aren't you?
That's okay. I can think on my feet, unlike some people.
I hope you're not talking about your cousin.
To debate. He said that you had some issues regarding Stalin.
Stalin?
Mm-hmm.
What, is he? Yes, I do. What, is he one of your heroes?
No. No, I have studied some Russian history, not a huge amount. If anything, I would be a closet royalist. I felt that the obliteration of the Romanov family in the purge was very tragic. They may not have been perfect people. They may not have treated their people very well, but they certainly didn't deserve to be massacred in the way that they did.
Well, that's true. And part
you know,
of the bigger...
They could have been exiled. They could have been... they could have had a trial, a public trial. You know, the Russian Revolution, when it came about, you know, I understand the concept of what they were trying to do, but I think they took it to the extreme. And I do have a couple people that have lived in Russia and come over here, And from what I've seen, communism, it never really had a chance to work, because if you look at human nature being what it is, if everything is equal, there are those who are going to be working hard, and there are those who are just going to slack. The only true communistic society that I have ever seen work, and I mean really work, is an Israeli kibbutz. And the reason that that works is because you've got people who are bound by a religion. And they all want it to work because they all share the same basic values.
And you actually believe that?
I believe it because I know people who have been in an Israeli kibbutz, and it works.
Oh, really? And how much American tax dollar aid did they receive to prop up their little country?
Well, okay, all right. You want to talk about Israel?
No, I want to talk about economics, too. Let's back up a little bit here, honey.
Okay.
You spoke about the Russian monarchy.
Uh-huh.
A monarchy is not necessarily a bad thing if it holds back the power of the state.
True.
Look at Thailand today. They like their king and queen. The British like their queen. She's a symbol of unity for the British Commonwealth.
My biggest
problem with the Tsar is
she does not have any real power. She's a figurehead, but she has no real power. She doesn't pass any laws.
She has a little, but she is a figurehead. But as far as the Russian Revolution, my biggest problem with the Tsar is that he foolishly, on behalf of France, they mobilized against Germany in World War I, which is totally unnecessary, that whole situation. And when you talk about the Russian Revolution in 1917, that was essentially a atheist Jewish revolution. It was largely done by atheist Russian Jews, orchestrated this whole deal, and they orchestrated the murder of over 20 million Russian Christians.
Well, I do know that there were a lot of religious people in Russia that did die. And you know, as I did, you know, Blaine had mentioned the fact that, well, Hitler didn't close any churches. That actually is not true. But that's a separate issue.
There you go,
PK. That's a separate issue. But when Stalin took over, with the Russian Revolution, when Stalin took over Russia, and he did have a real bone about religion of any kind. And he, you know, you have to remember, he also had the pogroms against the Jews. So there were Jews that were persecuted in Russia.
That was before Stalin.
Well, that was
Stalin,
somewhat during the Tsar's
Stalin
time.
Didn't
it also
take power
happened
till
afterwards.
Like the mid-late 20s. The last pogroms, I believe, were before 1910 or so.
I thought that there were some that had happened like in the 20s, but I could be wrong.
You are wrong.
I mean, Stalin did not like religion per se.
Neither does communism.
What I explained to Blaine, though, about Stalin was that Stalin was an equal opportunity hater. He hated everybody.
I mean, he
didn't pick on people just because of their religion or just because of their sex or just because of their genealogy. He went after everybody. You know, look at the purges that he made of the military, you know, where he decimated the heads of the military and then got all pissy when his people couldn't win a battle. And it was like, well, hello, if you hadn't killed off all your generals,
he could
win a war.
He also decimated the Polish generals in 1940 in the Katyn Forest.
Yes, he did.
So, but you have to back up still. What he orchestrated after he took power after Lenin, the great purges and the Holodomor, the Ukrainian Holocaust. Most of Stalin's commissars, like probably 75% of his commissars and his henchmen, they were Russian atheist Jews, and they oversaw.
I did not realize that there was that high of a percentage.
Well, I didn't realize this either until about 5 years ago. Solzhenitsyn writes about this, and we must understand that Hitler knew this and Europe knew this. And while parts of Europe might not have cared for Hitler, they realized that only a strong Germany stood between Europe and Stalin, because Stalin had already murdered over 20 million people before World War II.
True.
And in Germany, Germany had over a million communists trying to, in the 20s, right after the war, trying to overthrow the Weimar Republic. And once again, a lot of their leaders were atheist Russian Jews. Russia also exported Russian communist Jews to help in the Spanish Civil War, where they murdered a lot of priests and clergy. So there's a very strong atheist Zionist Jew membership in a lot of this that went on, because things happened for a reason.
Well, the thing that I know about Hitler is that he did some things that would be considered positive. But the main thing that sank his battleship, so to speak, was not necessarily that he was crazy, because he was, but he surrounded himself with people who were truly sociopathic. You know, if you look at his inner circle, he had people who were just, by themselves they would have been bad, but when you combined all of them together and what they truly did, I mean, you know, the concentration camps, you know,
right.
And it wasn't just, the thing is that people always associate Hitler with Judaism and with the eradication of Jews. He did that, but he also got rid of a whole lot of other people. Communists, and he got rid of Catholics, and he got rid of Protestants, and he got rid of gays, and he got rid of political dissidents that he didn't like. I mean, he had a whole slew of people.
And
he also started a euthanasia program back in the 30s. To start getting rid of the feeble, the mentally incompetent, where he literally had doctors going in and injecting these people, these children and adults, who were mentally incompetent, and he had them injecting air bubbles into their bloodstream and killing them.
It's interesting that
the parents, they had a cold, or they died of this, or they died of that. And, I mean, he got rid of not just thousands, he got rid of like tens of thousands.
It's interesting that people focus on the Nazi camps, which were actually labor camps, and they overlook the Stalin's camps of almost 10 years earlier.
Well, that's true.
That's very true.
You know, look at
Stalin outkilled Hitler by probably 20 to 1. And in Russia, Stalin and his Jewish commissars, atheist Jews, they closed the churches, but synagogues were seldom harmed.
Really?
The reason there were concentration camps in Germany is because Germany had a large problem with communists trying to overthrow the government.
Mm-hmm.
The gypsies,
I had read.
The gypsies, if you've ever seen the gypsies going through the German countryside, how they looked and how they lived, the Germans put them in camps and cleaned them up and fed them. They look worse than the worst homeless I've ever seen here. I have a DVD of Auschwitz, and Arbeit is German for work. Those were labor camps. And
there was a portion of Auschwitz which was a labor camp, but there was also a portion that was a death camp.
No, that's not correct.
Have you ever been to one of the concentration camps?
No.
I have. I went to Dachau.
I lived
in Germany for 2 years.
Have you seen David Cole's YouTube?
Mm-hmm.
You know who David Cole is?
Mm-mm. No.
Young Jewish fella who went to Auschwitz. And he, when he got back and showed his film, he was attacked by other Jews because he questioned the whole deal of the gassings and everything. Let me lay it out for you right now, what I've learned.
Mm.
Those were work camps. Those were labor camps where people were put in those camps where they were thought to be enemies of the state. They put gypsies in there. They put communists in there. And the Jews were put in there. But why were the Jews put in camps?
Well, I know that at one point they had created like ghettos for them, like the one in Lutz and Warsaw? The one in Warsaw. That they were trying to like herd them or corral them to keep them contained in a special area. But
yes,
why? Well, but from what I read was that they corralled them to keep them, make them easier to find.
That's not what I mean. That's not what I mean. I learned this about 6-7 years ago, and there's been so much left out of history that thank goodness for objective intellectual scholarly revisionism to line history up with the facts. Every country's had wealthy, successful people, but they haven't been kicked out or driven out. Europe has kicked out, almost every European country has kicked out the Jews in the past. And,
That's true.
I want to know, why did this happen? Why? Why were they put into camps in Germany? Because?
Well, from what I have read.
I'm talking about PK now. Let's back up.
Okay.
I'll tell you why they were put in camps. I never was taught this. I never learned this. Because on March 24th, 1933, international Jewry, global Jewry, declared economic war on Germany, economic boycott on Germany. Now, I never knew this. Plus, the Jews inside of Germany didn't like this, what the Jews outside of Germany were doing. And on March 28th, 4 days later, Germany launched a one-day boycott against Jewish shops. That's why that happened. So then Germany thought, well, we have an alien tribe amongst us whom we can't trust. It was just how many Americans felt about the Japanese when they were incarcerated unconstitutionally.
Hello.
And I have seen a lot of footage of Auschwitz in some of these camps, and those prisoners often had it better than the American Japanese. Now, what would have happened to the American Japanese who were interned in internment camps if the infrastructure to the camps were bombed out and they couldn't receive food and medicine? What would have happened to the Japanese citizens?
Well, they probably would have died.
Correct. Therefore, most of the people who died in the camps died from mainly disease, mainly typhus. That's why they shaved their heads, because lice carry typhus.
Well,
died,
that I do know.
They died from disease.
Is that Woody?
No.
Or is it Beanie? Okay. It's Beanie. Okay.
They died primarily from disease, typhus, starvation, deportation, forced labor, and war. There were no gas chambers. There were crematoriums to dispose of all the dead bodies who died from the conditions I just described. The Zyklon.
Well, I actually have
the so-called gassing.
The book
was
written used from reports of the Germans left at Buchenwald.
The gassing was used to delouse the bedding and the clothing of lice and to try to get rid of the typhus problem. That's what the gassing was.
Why would they use Zyklon B, which would kill them? Zyklon B was not a disinfectant.
Zyklon B, the way the so-called survivors have described it, you couldn't apply Zyklon B if you were one of the people who was doing it and get away alive. You had to be away from that stuff. It lingered. It stayed. David Cole exposed this when he went to Auschwitz. You can see David Cole on YouTube.
I'll have to look it up and see that because that does sound interesting.
David C-O-L-E. When you see all the bodies, when the camps were liberated, when you see those stacks of bodies, those nude bodies, well, one reason they were nude is they were stripped from clothing by the other inmates. But those bodies died from the reasons I described. Those bodies were not riddled with bullets. Why are there so many people in the footage, in the photos of the camps when they were liberated? Why are there so many emaciated living people in their bunk beds or just standing by the fences? Why weren't they just murdered? Because that was not the German policy.
Well, what about all the research from Mengele, the medical research that he did? I've actually seen the footage that the Germans filmed.
Let's talk about that.
I've seen the actual footage.
Let's talk about that.
Mengele.
I know who he was. I didn't get to mention this, but first of all, yes, I clearly acknowledge in World War II, and a lot of this stuff happened in the Pacific too. I clearly acknowledge the existence of genocide, torture, concentration camps, forced marches, forced labor, starvation, disease. I clearly acknowledge all those. Yes, that happened, but the overall German policy was not to exterminate the Jews, it was to deport the Jews from Europe, and the Zionists cooperated with the Nazis in mid-30s for the transfer agreement, moving the Jews from Europe to Palestine. But a lot of Jews did not want to leave Europe to go live in the desert. They were pressured into this by Zionists. They even struck a coin that had the swastika on one side and the Star of David on the other, about the transfer agreement.
Hmm. Well, I know that there were some that had managed to get out. The lucky ones had managed to get out. But like I said, I've read the stuff that Mengele did. I've actually seen some of the video. I actually have a book about Reinhard Heydrich, and he was truly a monster.
Speaking of monsters, doesn't it seem hypocritical for us to talk about them when the CIA has been renditioning and torturing innocent people, among others, since this war of terror has started, this war on terrorism?
Do we even know about their
secret prisons in other countries who allow torture going on?
You know, no, I don't. I don't have any feeling of sympathy for those guys. After what they pulled on 911, no.
So, in other words, if they just collect people they think are guilty and rendition them to countries that allow torture with no trial or no inquiry, and they torture them, you're okay with that?
Well, I mean, let's look at what they did to Daniel Pearl. They beheaded him on TV.
That's right. These are
people who have no compassion whatsoever. None. I mean, my God, they treat their women like they're dogs. I've seen dogs treated better than they treat their ladies.
I have been to Morocco several times. I've been to Tunisia several times after the first World Trade Center attack, before 9/11.
Okay.
I went around Morocco. I've been to the Kasbah. I've been buying hashish and other places. I've been to Muslims' homes. Nobody ever tried to make me convert. No one came after me with a sword.
I'm not saying that they're all bad. I was in Tangiers
and Casablanca several times. And I was in Tunisia, the former home of the PLO, several times, and no one ever hassled me. So that's a big myth. But back to Germany, back to World War II.
Okay.
What they wanted to do was evict the Jews from Europe, and parts of Uganda were considered. But what would have been great was Madagascar. If they would have put them all in Madagascar, there's no religious shrines. That was a French colony at one time. They could have put them all there, and with Jewish know-how and investment, that would have been a tremendous developed island paradise without the terrorism that goes along with the Middle East that the Rothschild-backed Zionists have brought upon themselves in the Middle East.
Well, I mean, I'm sorry that I don't really believe what you're telling me, but I mean, in fairness to me, you have to understand, I have been to Germany. I've actually been to a couple of the concentration camps. I've seen them. I have not seen them since I was a child, so I think as an adult I would think perhaps differently. I don't know.
Did you see the swimming pool?
But I have, as I said, seen some of the actual footage. The Germans were meticulous in keeping records of what they did.
True.
They were meticulous.
True.
They actually had videos of them abusing people. They actually had videos of them gassing people. They actually had videos of them doing the death sort, where one went one direction and one went the other. whether that was the norm or whether that was an exception to the rule, I don't know. But I'm saying that the stuff that I've seen and the stuff that I've read points to me that what I learned in high school and college and since then has been accurate. Now, if what you're telling me is that you've read different things, I'd like to have an opportunity to read some of that.
Did you see?
And to see where it comes from and to check the validity of it.
I
absolutely would be happy to look at the YouTube video of David Cole and to see what he saw.
Did you see the swimming pool at Auschwitz?
No. Mm-mm.
There's a swimming pool, and if you go on a tour today, you have to ask to see it. They've also lowered the numbers of deaths at Auschwitz. And, you know, there's all these Holocaust survivors who are still trying to extort money out of Germany. Jewish writer Norman Finkelstein has a book called The Holocaust Industry, and he talks about this, how they're trying to milk, the Swiss banks and Germany still for these things. So Auschwitz, I'm sure that a lot of Hitler's underlings did a lot of things that he wouldn't have approved of, especially in the East, where they put people into pits and machine gunned them down, which incidentally...
Oh, or Heydrich, who he actually created the mobile unit, but where they would actually cram a bunch of people into like a big furniture van and lock the doors and then put the exhaust into the... The exhaust would go back into the container, and it literally would suffocate everybody.
If
but
that
they
happened,
could only kill
that,
something like, I think, a couple hundred at a time, because obviously, you know, you were confined by how many you could cram into that space. And the more you crammed in, the less effective that would be because the air wouldn't circulate.
There may have been some of that, but as I understand it, they weren't gassed in the showers. That's all. And they tortured a lot of, you know, before the Nuremberg trials, they tortured a lot of Germans. And so a lot of those confessions were, you know, were brought under duress and torture. As I understand it, I have a DVD of Auschwitz. And it's probably about 1941 or 42. You see the Jews in there with their Star of David stitched on their clothing. They're playing soccer. They have theater, they have comedians, they have string quartets, they have, they're working the fields, and they're working, there's factory work. So, you know, that's what mainly those camps were, and they were also building supplies for the German military. So, and...
Well, I do have a book about Auschwitz that talks about that.
And the camps...
And it does talk about the fact that... The ones who went to the forced labor, they were truly overworked, that they would be given the jobs that would, you know, they weren't even fed starvation food levels. And so that was one of the reasons why they died, was because they basically were working them to death and not feeding them.
Well, and the first people who I know had concentration camps were the British in South Africa, you know, the Boer War. And so, you know, and especially like in World War I, for Britain and France to make Germany give up their empires and force Germany to pay reparations when French, you know, the French and the British empires had a lot of brutality. So for them to try to come off as the good guys against Germany is, to me, is ludicrous.
Well, you know, the problem was is that the Germans during World War One, they were not the only ones that did bad things. But the problem was that they were perceived as the aggressors. And therefore, because they were perceived as the aggressors, they ended up having to pay the price.
Do you think that in World War One the Germans were perceived to be the aggressors because the British cut the telegraph lines from Europe to the U.S., but left the telegraph lines from Britain to the U.S. intact, so Americans only got British propaganda? You think that might have had something to do with it?
I mean, look at the Lusitania. The Lusitania has been proven to have been carrying war material.
Of course.
The press. And yet, what is the one thing that people think of when they hear about the Lusitania? How dare they have sent it to the bottom? You know, how dare they have targeted that ship? But the Germans, in fairness to everybody, told them ahead of time, if you get on, you know, Americans, if you get on this ship, Germany is targeting all the ships coming to Britain. They are targeting them, and you could die.
Well, Beth, you're actually right about that.
I mean, that's been in history books now for probably the last 15, 20 years.
The battleship Maine is
the
same thing.
The Lusitania, that they found bullets, they found guns, they found cannon, they found all kinds of artillery that was all destined for
Britain.
It was all destined for Britain. Now, on the other hand, the German captain who targeted that ship knew that that was a luxury liner. He could have given them a warning and said, look, you've got half an hour to get these people off the boat, get them into lifeboats, and get them the hell away from here. And kept a gun on the ship and forced them to offload and get the people off. At the very least, the women and children. At the very least, the women and children. They were only something like 3 or 4 miles away from the coast of Ireland. They were very close.
Well, that was done deliberately to bring Britain
into
the U.S. into the war.
Yeah,
just like
was.
The battleship Maine in Havana Harbor blew up of its own accord. It wasn't because of Spain. Come forward to Pearl Harbor. They already broke the Japanese code. FDR did maneuver Japan into firing the first shot. He cut off their oil with no congressional approval, cut off their raw materials. So they maneuvered them into that because he wanted to get into war into Europe. And by attacking Japan, who was in a treaty with Germany,
he knew that by Japan attacking us, we would declare war on Japan. Germany would declare war on us. We could declare war on Germany. It was all, you do this, I do that, and everything hooks together.
It was all staged by the wealthy globalists, and the regular pawns are the people in the military and the rank and file who had to fight the wars for these rich bastards. And now it's happening with the military now in the Middle East, in our wars against terrorism. 9/11, to me, was also staged. I don't believe that the planes brought those towers down by themselves.
You have a code?
Really?
Well,
because I've watched, they had a special on from, who was it? It was Popular, Popular Mechanic, who actually did a, Popular Mechanic, who did a special on the,
9/11.
On 9/11, and they actually proved, I mean, they showed it step by step, but they proved that it would be possible to bring the towers down the way that they said. Now, whether or not I believe them, I don't know. I mean, I'm not an engineer. I have to be able to take their word for it, but I do find it interesting that you know, those towers on a good day held somewhere between 50 and 75,000 people. And on that particular day that they got hit, that we lost only 3,000, that's pretty amazing.
You know, you know about World Trade Center Building number 7?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so you know that came down 5:20 in the afternoon on the same day.
Right.
It had fire damage. It wasn't hit by a plane. It was a controlled implosion. Now that there are architects and engineers for 9/11, another inquiry. I've seen their video. I've been to their presentations. Now that they're involved, and architects and engineers from outside of the U.S., they don't believe that the planes alone took those towers down. And
oh,
you can
really?
See Wait, you can see footage of firemen across the street on 9/11 from the towers. The towers have been hit by the planes. They hadn't come down yet, but you can hear bombs going off down below. It is my opinion that Israel's Mossad had much to do, big time, with bringing those towers down, with probably help from maybe some black ops from the CIA. But Osama bin Laden, to me, was their Lee Harvey Oswald, their James Earl Ray, their Sirhan Sirhan. They need the patsy. I believe Osama bin Laden had next to nothing to do with 9/11.
Even if he had nothing to do with that, he was not an innocent. The man was not an innocent.
But the CIA, they enable these people. Look at these supposed terrorist attacks in the U.S. They've been given a lot of stuff by the FBI, has given them stuff that won't blow up. So they enable these people. They encourage, they set this stuff up. You know, on 9/11, that day, there was a NORAD stand down. That's why those jets weren't scrambled right away, which they would normally scramble immediately. These sort of deviations. And why was this happening? Because that snake, that bastard Cheney, was conducting military drills on the morning of 9/11. So the air traffic controllers didn't know, well, is this a military drill? Is this business as usual? Or is this a hijacking?
Yeah.
So all this war stuff.
I still think, though, that, as I said, I don't think that bin Laden was an innocent. Not in any way, shape, or form was he an innocent. Was he entirely responsible for 9/11? I don't know.
Do you think the CIA are innocent?
No, I don't think the CIA are innocent.
Do you know that they are very big in pushing illegal drugs? They're big, big, big in drugs. During Vietnam, they put heroin in the cadavers in the body bags of dead GIs coming back to the U.S.,
I did hear about that, yeah.
Today,
my dad was in the United States military.
Today,
and he was actually over in Vietnam. So, yes, I had heard stuff like that.
Well, today, poppy production is at an all-time high in Afghanistan right now. I've seen footage on YouTube of British and American troops guarding poppy fields. CIA turns a lot of that stuff to get revenue for things that Congress won't give them money for their black ops, all their underhand crap that they do. They're heavily involved in all this stuff.
Well, and, you know, if you back up to the late 1800s, the early 1900s, the British Navy was working with the opium in China.
You're talking about the opium wars of 1846 and 1848.
I mean, you're talking about, you know, this isn't the first time this has ever happened.
Well, yes, but not on this scale. I mean,
that's true. I mean,
I used to think that the British were forcing Indian opium into China because they wanted, you know, they wanted China to have Indian opium. But I've also heard that one of the reasons China resisted, because China had its own opium and they didn't want competition from India.
Well, I mean, you know, I think the British, you know, the British certainly were no better than anybody else in terms of their colonialism. You know, their attitude towards, you know, colonizing the world was basically, we're the big guys and we know what's good for you and, you know, whether you like it or not, we're taking over.
Yeah, well, guess who's picked up their legacy?
Of course you want our customs. And of course you want our way of life. And of course you want to learn cricket. And of course you want to drink tea. And
who's got the big empire now?
Well, I would say it's America.
Unfortunately, yes. You know, we're supposed to be a republic, not an empire, not a country with over 1,000 military bases and over 140 foreign countries. No wonder those people don't like us.
It's supposed to be a democracy, my dear, but yeah. We are supposed to be a democratic republic.
We're a republic with democratic means of electing our leaders.
True.
But even that is staged because Obama and Romney, they're basically the same. They both support the wars. They support Wall Street, the big banks, the military-industrial complex, and the Israeli lobby. They support the same things. They're both for the Patriot Act. They're both for military renditions. They've kept Gitmo going.
Yeah, I was going to say, I really don't see a huge, unfortunately, not a huge difference between either one.
Well, good for you, because there's hardly any difference. And, you know, abortion, I mean, there's 22 million people or more unemployed. To me, abortion's, you know, okay, it's a side issue. We got much bigger fish to fry.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if Blaine told you or not, but I actually work for unemployment. And I actually see the raw figures. And I talk to the people who are unemployed every single day. I average over 100 calls a day.
And what have we learned?
I am one of 200 in my call center, and our call center is one of 10 throughout the state. So you do the math.
Well, the math is that California, my favorite state, has mismanaged itself so poorly, and it has to abide by all these stupid Washington edicts, so you have a huge welfare state in your state, and it's bankrupting your state, and you've got public employee unions out of control. And your prison industrial complex is out of control. Your prison guards lobby for the three strikes laws, you know, so...
Because it keeps them in business.
I know, but, you know, that's not how markets would really work. There'd still be employment, but it would shift into different, more productive uses.
Well, the thing that gets me about the, you know, everybody was so happy to hear about the jobs report. But I took statistics in college, and one of my statistics professors told me, he said, you can manipulate numbers any way you want. He said, a truly good statistician will ask you, what are you trying to prove with these numbers? And then work the numbers the way you need them to look. And the bottom line is, and I still blame this, is those reports that are coming out from Washington are a lie.
Big lies.
They are a lie, because I talk to the people every day. And I'm here to tell you, we're getting brand new claims all the time.
Sure, you can trust the government. Just ask an Indian.
Yeah.
And by the way, who orchestrated the genocide of the American Indians?
Well, I would have to say that would be us nice little pilgrims.
Well, I would have to say, once again, you're wrong.
Really? And who do you think orchestrated their death?
It's not who I think. It's who orchestrated it, period. Do you give up?
Sure, go ahead.
Lincoln's generals orchestrated the genocide of the American Indians, and they used black troops to do it. Hence Bob Marley's song, Buffalo Soldier, because the Indians referred to the black soldiers, the newly freed slaves, soldiers, as buffalo soldiers, because the hair on the black men's heads remind them of the hair on the nape of the buffalo. And that's why they use that term buffalo soldiers. But Lincoln's generals orchestrated this, and General Sherman was one of the people who coined the phrase, a good Indian is a dead Indian.
True. But you have to understand, a lot of the Indians were already dead by that time. What about the Indians that were on the East Coast? The Iroquois, you had the Cherokee who were on the East Coast, were marched over into Oklahoma and left there, and then marched again up into the North.
The Trail of Tears by Andrew Jackson. Jackson
right.
was good about getting rid of the Second Bank of the U.S., but he was bad about what he did to the Indians. Yes, yes. And also in the Northeast, I think there was more, you know, like clashes between settlers and Indians.
There were clashes.
Than there was a genocidal military policy with the strength and power that the Union Army had post-Civil
War.
There
were a lot of big clashes with the military in the late 1800s, right after the Civil War.
About 1866 onward.
Right. But...
There
were cases in the late 1700s, early 1800s, where settlers and others and I would have to go look it up to figure out who exactly it was. But they actually made concerted efforts to get rid of the Indians by giving them blankets that were infected with smallpox.
I thought that came later.
No, that was in the late 1700s, early 1800s.
That was the
white settlers who did that.
You also had the French and Indian War in 1756.
Also had the French and Indian War, yes.
But my paradigm would have been, and it was more like in the 1600s, middle, late 1600s, I believe. My paradigm, my mentor.
That started then.
My paradigm for treating the Indians.
The Indians actually liked the settlers. They were actually friendly with them sometimes. Not always, but sometimes. It wasn't until the 1700s that they started to get pissed.
My paradigm, my mentor for the way to treat Indians and fellow human beings was William Penn, who respected the Indians. He kept his word with them. He kept contracts with them, unlike the federal government, who led to their genocide. But let's back up a little bit, okay, to the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Lincoln, who to me was one of the worst presidents ever, the first dictatorial, horrific president, he was into colonizing the former slaves. He wanted, his long story short, had Lincoln lived after the war, his message to the slaves would have been, all right, you've got your freedom now, get out. Because he wanted to deport them back to Africa, to Haiti, and Central America. And even his speeches before his election, he talked about, or even slightly after, he didn't mind, he was willing to keep slavery as long as the South did not secede. And the Civil War was not really fought over slavery.
There actually is a book that I have on Lincoln that talks about, he talks about in this letter that he says, if I can reunite the country by freeing some of the slaves and not all the slaves, I will. If I can reunite this country by freeing none of the slaves, I will. And if I can reunite this country by freeing all of the slaves, I will. The bottom line, he wanted to reunite the country. And the bottom line for the Civil War, it was not a war over slavery. It was a war over states' rights versus federal rights. But
yes.
If you talk to anybody who has taken American history and they ask you for the reason for the Civil War of America, they will tell you it's slavery.
That's because court historians serve the state, and the Civil War was really fought more over the tariff because they kept imposing higher tariffs on the South, and that money did not go – much of it did not go to the infrastructure of the South. It went to the infrastructure of the North because the South was happy to trade agriculture goods, especially with Britain and France, and get machinery from them. But the North taxed them for that. And so that had a lot to do with it, the moral tariff, M-O-R-R-I-L, I believe.
And, the thing is that they don't want to talk about the fact that there were slaves that were in the North.
Hell yes.
There were lots of slaves in the North.
Boston was a big trade center.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing that's come out recently that people don't like to hear, but a lot of the slaves, the Jewish-owned ships and Jewish captains had a lot to do with the slavery days. In fact, there was plenty of Jewish slaveholders in the South, and even they didn't sort of like the hypocrisy of being served by their slaves during Passover when they were celebrating the plight of the Jews, escaping. So, there's that too. So that's why on this show, Third Stream View, I'm not afraid of revisionism. I'm not afraid of criticism. I wish that what I have to say was more mainstream. Because
whatever I've
spoke to you about tonight that hasn't been controversial, you don't hear me saying or also spewing, kill this group of people or take their rights away. Mine is always an expose on power, regardless of who wields it or who yields it.
Okay. I have to admit that I do get a tendency to be pro-American and protective of American rights. But I do understand that we need to stop playing Big Brother to the world. We need to let the world take
care of it. That's right. So,
you know, the thing that always makes me laugh is that, you know, there's all these countries that say nasty things about us. Let there be a natural disaster, an earthquake, a fire, a flood, tsunami. Oh, my God, who do they look to? Hello?
Well, despite your American martyrdom, despite your American martyrdom there should be no American taxes going overseas to any of these countries. If Beth wants to write a check to help somebody in a foreign country, you go, girl.
But
we should not be taxed for it, and that's a major problem right there, too. Is Blaine still there?
Yeah, he's right here. Blaine, get out of the kitchen.
Hey,
don't. Beth. Beth.
Huh?
You should be in the kitchen, honey.
Oh, no, that's where he always eats. He never uses a plate.
Oh, I'm into that. Well, I'm going to say...
Stop that. Be nice. Blaine, be nice. Go back in the kitchen. God. He's horrible. And use a plate.
I'm going to start...
I do not understand that, eating over a sink with no dish.
That's a bachelor thing. I'm into that, too.
It's a boy thing. It's
Beth,
a boy
you have
thing.
To Beth, you have to understand.
We're
not perfect. But since women are little girls, they're taught and told that men are perfect. And we're not.
I was never taught that.
That's a good one. I wrote it.
I was never taught that. So, no, I was taught that, you know, we are fallible human beings and each of us has things that, each of us has things that are good and bad, and no one is perfect.
Well, I'm pretty close, so I hope thank you very much. I hope that you have been enlightened by the mighty PK tonight, and I hope that you will never look at these things in the same way, and I hope Blaine will forward PK's essay about World War II.
He actually did forward it. I haven't read it yet.
Because,
so I will read it, and I will get back to you, okay?
Yes, and history is always written by the victor, and the U.S. is no exception.
That's true.
That is true. So
and those who do not learn the history are doomed to repeat it.
That's right, but it depends who's writing it. And it's written by court historians who have an agenda. They serve the state. They often glorify the worst presidents. So, you know, that's a big...
Now, nobody ever talks about how, like, you know, George Washington was supposed to be perfect. He was the father of our country. He was our very first president. He was wonderful. Hello, he died of tertiary syphilis.
Well,
did you know that?
I didn't know that.
That's actually what he died of, was tertiary syphilis.
My problem with him is listening to that fool Hamilton when he had the whiskey rebellion and he went to repress those farmers with the whiskey tax. So, you know... I didn't appreciate that.
I mean, each of the presidents, it's interesting when you look into their history, each of them has stuff that you're just going, really? Really? And you got away with it? Oh, my God. There is that book that I read. Remember that book that I was telling you about, Blaine, that said that all the presidents of the United States were descended from lizard aliens? I don't know if that was true or not, but it certainly made me laugh.
If he knew that Abraham Lincoln was said to be bisexual.
No.
Yeah.
Really? Ew.
Yeah. Did PK know that?
No, I don't know about that, but you know that Lincoln was Jewish, you know.
I did hear that.
Did you know that Lincoln was Jewish?
I had heard that, yes.
He was shot in the temple.
Ouch. Oh, man.
He didn't know PK, that Lincoln was bisexual. PK didn't know that?
No, let's hear this one.
I never heard that one, no.
Never heard that one?
No. Of course, one look at, you know, Mary Todd Lincoln and, hey, you know.
That's true. Well, you know what Mary Todd Lincoln said to her husband the night he went to the theater? You know what Lincoln said to his wife the night he went to the theater?
Ah.
He said, Mary, I need to go to the theater like I need a hole in the head.
Well, did you hear what they asked Mary Todd Lincoln after?
No.
Other than that, Mary, how was the play?
Good one. Good one.
Thank you.
Yes, yes.
Thank you. Anyway, I need to get to bed, so I'm going to let you go.
All right. Well, I'm going to sign off now. Thank you for coming on, Beth. I'm sorry I had to overwhelm you a bit, but you're going to look at things differently now.
That's okay. Like I said, I think well on my feet, so, well, at least I can usually keep my balance.
Well, you did pretty good for a girl.
And we will converse some more, okay?
We will. You did pretty good for a girl. Good night, honey.
Ouch. Thank you.
All right, Blaine. Thank you for hooking me up in conversation with your brilliant cousin. But anyway, at this point, ladies and gentlemen, my millions of viewers, I am going to wind down now and say good night until next time. I appreciate you tuning in, and I enjoyed our conversation, a little history, and a little important revisionism. So I didn't disagree with what she had to say about certain things, especially about World War II and the camps and this and that, but I had to put in what I have learned since then. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, I bid you good night from PK here at Third Stream View, where I reside every Monday evening, 8:55 Pacific, 10:55 Eastern, 11:55 Central. Sorry, Eastern. Good night, everyone.